Good morning, everyone, and welcome. It's FPC Radio Live. It is Friday, September 30th, 2022, and we are getting ready for week four in the NFL. It kicked off last night with the Dolphins and Bengals, and the Dolphins, John, well, their 1972 team can pop the champagne because that team is undefeated, no more, and we only have one left. So, obviously, the story last night, you know, more so than, you know, the fact that the Dolphins obviously no longer 3-0, they dropped to 3-1, is Tua. And what we saw last week and, you know, kind of the explanation, and look, we're not doctors, we're not sitting here saying we know more than neurologists or people that examined him. What we saw was what looked like a concussion, and the explanation about the back was, I don't think many people bought that. 4 days later, another very, very obvious concussion, and you just hope that, you know, this isn't going to be something that's going to linger for Tua, because we know, or at least we know far more now than we ever did about the severity of head injuries and repeated head injuries. And, you know, if it does, again, if it comes to light that this whole situation, you know, especially from last week, was not managed properly, then I think the hammer has to come down, and I think the Dolphins are rightfully should be in the ire of many, many former players, current players, executives, whatever. Because yeah, that's just an unfortunate situation that, again, seems, John, like it could have been avoided.
Without question, if Sunday he suffered a concussion and never went into concussion protocol, and then was allowed to play 4 days later on a Thursday night game, and then got absolutely mollywhooped on that play. Again, Tua's not a big guy, and, you know, he just obviously last night was a concussion. I think everyone can agree with that. Even the deniers out there will agree that that was a concussion, just the way that he was carted off the field. You know, he had his hands in the fencing position, which is a clear sign of a concussion. I just really feel bad for him. Again, I don't think he's a fabulous quarterback, but he seems like a really good kid, right? I mean, it just seems like a guy that you could root for easily. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the most athletic, doesn't have the strongest arm, all that. But he seems like someone you like to root for. He seems like a good person. And, you know, the problem with all of this is that the players at some point want to show their toughness. Well, I'm fine. I'm good to go out there. Don't take me out. Because, again, Tua's in his third year. If he has a big year, he's sitting on a, you know, $150 million contract, whether it be from the Dolphins or somewhere else. So the players are going to be wanting to play. And the teams are like, sure, Tua's better than Teddy Bridgewater, although I don't think it's that much of a difference. They want their best players out there. So it's just something that the league has done for years. We hope that it gets cleaned up, but it doesn't really seem to get cleaned up. And then you've got the specter of Thursday night football, right? So now whatever happened on Sunday, there's not enough ample time to recover, not just for Tua, but for any of the players that played on Sunday. But you know what? Thursday night football is here to stay, because Amazon pays $1 billion a year for the rights to show those games. That's $30 million per team. They're not giving that up. My only suggestion, I just put it on Twitter a little earlier today, is if you're going to have Thursday night football, first of all, go to 18 games. Like, that's going to happen at some point, right? It's going to go to an 18-game schedule. Mm-hmm. Go to 18 games, but give every team two bye weeks. So now the season is 20 weeks. You can end the season with the Super Bowl taking place the Sunday before President's Day. Everybody's got that next day off. Great. 18 games, 20 weeks. But one of those two bye weeks will come before your Thursday night appearance. Therefore, Cincinnati and Miami played last night. They would have not played on Sunday. So, that, first of all, you have better product out there, because last night's game was choppy, as is most of the games we've seen so far this year have been choppy. But if those two teams didn't play on Sunday, I thought you would have had a better product. And again, you most importantly would not be harming the players who got banged up on Sunday. I mean, the Dolphins defense played 90 plays, 90 snaps in 100-degree weather. I mean, how do you recover from that in like 3.5 days? You don't. That's one of my suggestions. And look, it's not going to cost the league any money. They've still got their network deal with Prime, and they're getting an extra game in an extra 2 weeks. So God bless them, but I think it would help the safety of the players, even though it is one more game.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is something that, again, is, you know, has been kind of pushed for a while, really, since the inception of Thursday Night Football, because, again, you know, And we see, you know, the tweets from the NFLPA yesterday and the comments by Mike McDaniel about safety and it's paramount, this, that, and the other. Now, obviously, you know, Mike McDaniel has nothing to do with how, you know, they add Thursday night games, but it's speaking more to the NFL's problem. Is like they say all these things, but then they do things that you know, fly in the face of what they said. You know, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. we want to make sure the game's as safe as possible, but we're going to make teams play on 3 days rest, and we're going to have a very, again, I don't know what to call it, to be honest with you, when it comes to the concussion protocol, because I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm, you know, like I'm a doctor, or I know, you know what I mean? Like that's not, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to do that. But like, and I understand that he was cleared yesterday, obviously, by, you know, neurologists and everything like that. But like, at a certain point, you just got to say, like, it's only been 3 days. And mm-hmm. like, I don't know anyone who is necessarily buying the whole back thing. Again, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know these things. I'm not like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I know more than all that. I saw what I saw on Sunday, and everyone else saw the same thing. And we're sitting here thinking, well, he's obviously concussed. And then we see what we saw yesterday, and it's like, you know, you just hope for the best long-term-wise because, again, it's more or less, it's less about football than it is about, you know, the health and safety of Tua at this point because, you know, again, we've seen what happens with repeated concussions and long-term effects and some things we don't even know yet, which is scary.
Yeah, it really is. And look, sometimes people look at it and then they show it in slow motion, which does it no service, doesn't really show the impact of the hit. And people say, well, that doesn't look all that bad. Well, you know, you have a 300-pound guy slam you to the ground at full force, and let me know how you're going to react to that and what your situation is going to be. And I always equate this, and, you know, cross-sport reference, I never thought I'd bring up auto racing, but, you know, we remember when Dale Earnhardt died, right? Where, you know, mm-hmm. he was driving, hit the wall, didn't look all that bad. Well, he died instantly because the steering wheel crushed his chest. Then you'll see another event in a race car where the car hits the wall, hits a couple of cars, flips over, goes into flames, looks like, oh my God, the driver's dead. He walks out without a scratch. I mean, it's similar to this, like just the wrong hit can cause a concussion and make it even worse. And sometimes you get hit and it's not quite as bad. But we see this with knee injuries, right? Like a guy will get absolutely destroyed and just bounce up and play, and then non-contact injury, the knee blows out. So this is why when people say, well, you know, it didn't look all that bad or what the case may be, we're not in that athlete's body. And again, it all comes back to money, right? Because Tua wants to get out there. He wants to prove his toughness. And again, if Tua continues to play well and this team goes to the playoffs, he's sitting on a big contract. And you know, again, that's what kind of makes the world go round, especially the NFL.
Well, and look, I mean, again, at a certain point, though, I do think that there is a responsibility by ownership, by management, by coaching staff to overrule that. Because, look, we know athletes are going to do it. And in some cases, they may not necessarily be in the right mind to make an appropriate decision. So at a certain point, you have to step in. And I don't care. Like, I mean, I don't care if he's quote-unquote cleared. I mean, just the situation, having it been just 3 days ago and looking like, you know, this wasn't a, you know, again, perception and you know, how it looked obviously makes us think it was worse. And again, maybe we were wrong. Again, to your point, you know, not everything, just because he's wobbling around doesn't mean it's the most severe concussion ever, but it's not to say that, you know, we're trying to minimize it. I'm just saying, like, what we saw was someone who looked very concussed, and then what we saw yesterday was even worse, as crazy as that sounds. So at a certain point, you just have to step in and be like, no, you got to sit down. And, you know, the comments made by Mike McDaniel after the game about it, you know, it could have been worse, or luckily it wasn't anything. Like, what's worse than a head injury? You know what I mean? Like, that seems very, very out of touch. And then I kind of chuckled at the other comment about, oh, we've always taken care, you know, we've always had the safety of the play. You've been there 3 weeks. What are you talking about always? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what you do. I don't know how you run it. And look, I mean, this could be an example of him maybe, again, learning the ropes and unfortunately making a decision that maybe he regrets. Maybe he should have said, you know what? Like, just like we heard from about Mike Tomlin yesterday and Bill Belichick, both stories that came out where I believe it was the lineman, I'm completely blanking on his name. Was it Orenberger, Rich Orenberger?
I think he, and
I apologize. I should have double checked this before I started bringing it up, but he talked about how he suffered a severe concussion and despite being cleared, was placed on injured reserve by the Patriots. Again, you know, sometimes you kind of have to just use your best judgment as opposed to just whether by the book he's quote unquote cleared, because what does that really mean, John? It just means he doesn't have symptoms anymore of that mm-hmm. current concussion. That doesn't mean that he's now invincible. And again, I may be getting this wrong, but if I understand concussions based on what we've been told about them, the more you have them, the more susceptible you become, mm-hmm. correct? So again,
correct. Yep.
Being cleared, quote unquote, it's just a matter of being non-symptomatic, you know, for that current concussion and all that stuff. And of course, you know, making sure that there's no immediate permanent damage. But we know, John, that these injuries aren't about immediate permanent damage. These are about long-term effects. And again, I hope that he's somehow skirted any sort of long-term, effects from this. And again, if it does come to light that there was certain things done to avoid concussion protocol, then I think the hammer has to come down very, very hard because, you know, this, again, flies in the face of what the NFL is quote-unquote standing for, and that is the health and safety of their players.
They wrote big checks, what, about 7-8 years ago, close to $1 billion, but it was strung out over 10 years, which came to nothing per team, really. Maybe they should have been fined or the settlement should have been more, like maybe 3 times more. Maybe that would have awoken the owners and management of these teams. I remember when that settlement came down, I think it was like $900 million, and it came to about $30 million per team stretched out over 10 years, which is $3 million a year, which is nothing. That's like, you know, pocket change for these owners. It just got stretched out, and it's like, yeah, here's a check for $3 million. Leave us alone. We're going to continue making money the way we make it anyway. It's kind of disgusting to the point where here's the thing that, look, we're going to watch the NFL. It's what we kind of do for a living. We're engulfed in this. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that tune in, whether it be Thursday or Sunday, that, you know, their week is normal like everyone else's. They go to work, they raise kids, do all of this stuff. And on Sunday, they put the TV on at 1 o'clock, maybe with some friends, have, you know, salsa and chili or whatever the hell people want to eat, wings. And they consume football and they really enjoy it. And then they go back to their normal lives. If you start to lose those people, and again, you could lose them because they could be turned off by this. And again, all day today, you're going to hear a lot of this on ESPN and Fox Sports One. So Stephen A. Smith and Cowher are going to have their hot takes and everybody's going to move on. But when CNN shows up and it's their lead story, and even local news mm-hmm. here, lead story was Tua's injury, or Good Morning America. And those are shows that are consumed by kind of soft football fans, right?
Yeah, the
not
fringe.
The hardcore
yeah.
football fans, the fringe fans, which makes the sport what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I kind of get the feeling with other sports, they're all kind of niche sports, right? Like, I love basketball. Like, I'm going to watch basketball. There's some, you know, borderline fans of basketball, but most of us are kind of like really into it. Football has this huge group of people that, again, on Sunday, sit down and watch football. If you start to lose them, the ratings are going to go down and all that money is going to dry up.
Well, it's not as big of a time commitment, you know, realistically,
exactly.
you know, because it's once a week, generally. I mean, obviously, we say once a week, but you know what I mean. For the most part, like, a majority of the games are centered on one day, and then, you know, it's a little bit easier to kind of, you know, just kind of work off that, you know, and to your point, you know, this is what happens. All of a sudden, you know, that parent that maybe doesn't watch the NFL, doesn't know quite too much about it, but their kid's into it, what do you think they're going to say? No, you're not playing football. And this is a problem that we've already seen. And again, you know, the NFL and through the NFL, obviously youth leagues and everything have taken many steps to try to obviously make the game safer, and I'm not saying that they haven't. But it's eventually going to come to a point where, you know, again, you're going to see this type of stuff, and what parent's going to let their kid go, you know, do that to themselves? And again, it doesn't mean every single parent's never going to let their, but numbers wise, you know, you're thinking long term, you know, you think how great the league is now. What happens when all of a sudden that talent pool becomes less and less and less every year? Because, well, guess what? People are afraid to, you know, risk their lives or risk their livelihood for a few years of football. And that's the thing. I mean, we focus on the guys that play 10, 15 years. What about the guys that play 3 years and barely make enough? I mean, certainly, you know, they could suffer a career or life-threatening or life-altering concussion, mm-hmm. play two seasons in the NFL, and barely make enough to survive for a few years. You know what I mean? So it's like this reality is we focus on the big names and the big money guys, the guys that have long careers. But all these linemen, all these backup linemen, all the practice squad guys, all these things, you know, they're the ones that are greatly impacted by this because, again, at the end of the day, you know, this isn't just, well, if football's over, then this problem's over. No, this problem sticks around long after you're done playing football. And it's, unfortunately for most people, playing football is only a 2 to maybe 3 year stretch of their life. You know, it's just
sure. And not to mention kids that, as far as they go, as high school or college, and then they have to get into the real world and they're still suffering because of concussions they suffered in 8th grade, 12th grade, college, whatever it may be. Yeah, there's a lot of after effects, and insurance may not cover certain things, or they may not even have insurance. Look, the old players that, you know, made the league great don't have the full coverage of insurance, which to me is sickening. You know, so much money that's coming in, like you can't cover the insurance of these guys in the 70s and even 80s who played, make the sport what it is, and now they are feeling the ramifications of the sport, which obviously the 70s and 80s, you know, this wouldn't even be a story. It would have, it wasn't as much, obviously, talk radio and all
Tua
that stuff.
Tua got his bell rung.
It got his bell rung. That was the other, but yeah, that was, ask Troy Aikman and Steve Young about getting their bells rung. I mean, both of those guys have talked about concussions, let alone someone like Jim McMahon, who, you know, the stories are like just scary.
Yeah.
That sometimes he'll leave his house and not know where his car is, forgets his car keys, goes out, forgets where he lives. I mean, that's turned your stomach. Yeah. And again, the NFL the NFL does so many things wrong and still makes money that it almost can't hurt itself. But there's going to come a point where
the bubble's,
you know, there's going to be a bill to pay. Yeah, it's going to be a bill to pay. And it's going to be, we thought it was 7 or 8 years ago with the settlement, but apparently not, because they're just continuing.
No, because that's not public enough. Again, we know
exactly
how things happen. I mean, I hate to say it, I really hate to say it, but it's going to take some devastating on camera situation. Yep. And I'm not saying that that's what it should take. Obviously, I think there's enough to warrant some more discussion, certainly a lot more discussion about all this. But, you know, I feel like that's what it's going to take for the bubble to burst, unfortunately. And sadly, it's not an unrealistic thought that eventually something like this is going to happen, whether intentional or just by accident. I mean, that's the nature of the game. And like, I understand that you can't completely eliminate concussions, but there's certainly a lot of things that they can do, and half-assing the protocol is not one of them. It's certainly not one of them. So, all right, before we get to our picks, I just want to take a moment to congratulate Aaron Judge for hitting the 7th most home runs in a season in Major League Baseball history.
I'm glad you're on my side,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, well, trust me, it's I was thinking yesterday, it's like, man, like when it's like, you know, people are out there celebrating the real home run record, where I'm like, yeah, well, I feel like Steinbrenner listening off all the people he fired. When I'm listening off, it's like Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, you know, Billy Martin, you know, it's like, I understand. Like I said it yesterday, there's no sport that has more gatekeepers than baseball. It's annoying, really, because it's part of the reason why this sport will never reach it what it once was among the American people, you know, the popularity mm-hmm. of the sport. And we see, you know, again, Like, who the hell is Robert Maris Jr. to sit there and tell us what? Of course Roger Maris thinks that his record's the record. Of course he does. Like, why wouldn't he? Because he had, you know what I mean? Like, of course he thinks his father's record is the real record. But the reality of it is, it isn't. And, you know, we're not talking about one guy who went rogue and did steroids. And I'm not saying like, oh, it's okay to do steroids. No, I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm saying. But the reality of it was an entire era of steroid users, both great players, bad players, pitchers, hitters, it doesn't matter. There was enough people to use them that I don't think it's like, what are we doing here? We're just going to sit there and pretend like it wasn't going on? That's what Major League Baseball did, and they were perfectly fine taking in the profits. Now they want to be gatekeepers. Now these former players want to be gatekeepers, or these executives, or the Hall of Fame voters. It's like, we're not going to allow you in. Guess what? Did someone hit 73 home runs in a season? Yes. Did Sammy Sosa hit 60 home runs 3 times? Yes. No matter what you say, no matter what real record you point to, it is what it is. So, you know, again, it's... I find it very annoying, John, and exhausting to see these, you know... If it wasn't for these three guys, well, guess what? They saved baseball. Let's be honest. They saved baseball. That home run chase in the late 90s saved baseball. Barry Bonds... You're telling me, you're going to sit there and tell me that that didn't happen? Like, what are we doing here? You know, so I did want to mention that real quick because, you know, again, it's we're not sitting here, you know, diminishing Aaron Judge's record. You know, it's an incredible thing that he's hit 61 home runs this season. You know, he's hit over 60 home runs this season. But don't sit there and tell me that, you know, that's not the real record. It's the real record. No, it's not.
He'll set the American League record when he hits number 62. Then,
which is fine.
If he has more than home runs, which is great. The other thing, too, is I do remember Roger Maris Jr. was in St. Louis in September of 1998 celebrating Mark McGwire breaking his father's record.
Yeah.
So now here we are 24 years later, and it's like, oh, my God. Everyone was there and saw it, right? I mean, so it, like you said, it saved baseball. Plus, they didn't test players till 2003. So Bonds hit his 73 home runs in 2001, and McGwire and Sosa were doing it in 98 and all of that. And the other thing, too, is, look, there's guys in the Hall of Fame that were in the Mitchell Report, namely David Ortiz. But because Ortiz knew how to work the media, and maybe he was a phony, maybe he wasn't. He's, you know, baseball Santa Claus, essentially. He gets into the Hall of Fame. Because Barry Bonds was a, you know, I don't want to use the word, but it begins with a P and ends with a K, then he doesn't get voted in. And the same thing with Roger Clemens. I mean, come on. Does anybody think that David Ortiz is a better baseball player than Barry Bonds? Like, David Ortiz would laugh at that notion.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, but that's the thing. All three of those guys deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. So, of like, you know, I don't think anyone, because, again, you sit there and, you know, you watch those late 90s and look. The media, the league, I mean, they were just as complicit as the ones using it because it was so rampant and no one cared until someone made a stink about it and then they had to save face. So now it's all about, oh, you know, this is that, we're not going to put him in or we're going to take a stand. But John, what happens? And I know I hate playing the hypothetical game, but, you know, this kind of, what happens if 10, 15 years from now we uncover documents? Imagine this, John.
Right.
That say or have some of those, you know, revered stars like Maris and all these other guys that did it right. What if it comes out? And it's perfectly within reason because we literally have no idea. Like, the people who believe that, you know, everything before 1995 was 100% clean, it's delusional. It's delusional. Because that's just, I mean, that's assuming that every single player over the 100-some-odd-year history of Major League Baseball did it right. And the reality of it is, they likely didn't. And there's likely, like you said, more people in the Hall of Fame that have used steroids, and maybe even Roger Maris used steroids. I don't know. So, like, this whole idea of gatekeeping and pretending like this was, like, this rogue, like, we were so against... No, everyone was for it. Everyone enjoyed it. Everyone loved it. Until, again... Congress put up a stink and you get the Mitchell Report and all of a sudden, you know, we're going to change base, which is fine. Which, again, you know, based on, you know, their ramification, the health and safety of people, yes. It's good that they got involved and tried to limit the use of steroids. But this whole revisionist history is what's sickening. And again, I just get so exhausted seeing these, oh, the real home run record. I don't care. No, it's not the real one. Just go live in your fantasy land if that's what you want to do. So,
Ian, Mickey Mantle used a cork bat. Mays and Aaron admitted that they used greenies, which were verboten in Major League Baseball. And you don't even have to go back that far. Go back about 16 years ago when Alex Rodriguez was with the Yankees. The Yankees so wanted him to set the single-season home run record and the career home run record, they kind of tried to build it into his contract, right?
Yeah.
Because they wanted a Yankee and a clean guy to hold the record. Well, what happened 7 years later? He tested positive, and he's never going to touch the Hall of Fame either. He belongs in the Hall of Fame because, personally, since I've been watching baseball, he's the second best player I've ever seen. And again, I'm watching 50 years. I didn't see Aaron Mays, Frank Robinson, Willie Mays, those guys in their prime. So I'll say from 72 on, I can somewhat coherently speak about baseball. To me, the three best players I saw were Bonds, A-Rod, and Griffey. And then Griffey always gets thrown into, well, he was clean. How the hell do we know?
Exactly.
I mean, Griffey had a ton of injuries where muscles were coming off of his bone, which is like, you know, somehow a telltale sign of steroids. Like, so definitely Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't using steroids, but everybody else was.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's you're literally very blatantly turning a blind eye to a lot of it. And again, fans are one thing, and I'll just shoot them down every single time that they come at me. Like, I had it yesterday, like, someone, you know, ranting and raving. I'm like, did Barry Bonds hit those home runs? Yes. Okay, so it happened. That's not the real record. But, you know, it's the writers, especially the ones that were around during that time that are now being the bastions of integrity, and it's just so transparent. And again, you wonder why this sport fails to, like, think about this, John. In this season, now again, I've fully admitted that my commitment to watching baseball on a day-to-day basis has certainly waned over the years. Think about this. In this season, Aaron Judge hits 61-plus home runs. You know, maybe he hits second, breaks the record. Albert Pujols gets his 700th home run, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How have they not massively capitalized on any of this?
Right.
All they've done, well, they've managed to annoy fan bases by inappropriately, I guess, injecting the home run race into certain things, or the home run hitting race into certain things. I mean, we had Shohei Ohtani go 8 hitless last night, you know, and then the guy has, what, a 14-15 game hitting streak? I mean, no one cares about that. I mean, baseball does everything in their power to not promote the game, and then, again, turn people off to the game. Because the more I see these, again, the not the real record, I'm just like, oh, I just don't care now. I don't care. Forget about it. And, you know, forget baseball. That's my mindset. And I think a lot of other people, certainly that are far more less of a fans of the sport than I am, are probably saying, oh, we don't even care. I mean, what you know what I mean? Like, what, it's the real record. It's not the real record. Who care? Who knows? I mean, it's annoying. But anyways, I'm getting off on a rant.
One final thing, Ian, it's my favorite sport, baseball. I don't watch it anymore. Just the way the game is played, it's laborious. It's, again, people don't understand the history. And so, like, I've kind of given up on it. I mean, all things being equal, it is my favorite sport, but I've kind of fallen out of love with baseball.
Yeah, look, I mean, and they make it easy to do it, you know? They do everything in their power not to promote the game as well as they should. So, all right, so we don't have too much time left here, but I do want to dive into our predictions. We're just going to go pretty quickly through these games and just give our thoughts. I'm already 0-1 for the week. I picked Miami yesterday, and that did not work out well. So I'm going to put a nice big X on that. Boom. Done. 0-1. Let's keep it going.
Well, I had the Bengals, again, minus even 3.5 points I thought they'd cover. I'm surprised you went against younger brother Joe Burrow.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm 0-3 in fantasy football. I'm like, I'm not doing well. It's been a tough start to the season. So anyways, let's jump into it. First matchup we're going to talk about or predict, Minnesota at New Orleans. I don't think New Orleans can play offense. So reluctantly, I'm going to go with Minnesota, especially since this is not a primetime game.
No, it's at 9:30 in the morning, right? Because they're playing overseas.
Technically is a primetime game, but maybe overseas across the pond is a little bit more suitable for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, is Kirk Cousins like the old guy that functions best early in the morning? Although it's going to be like 3:30 or 2:30 most of the time in England.
I'm picking the Vikings because of the Saints, not because of the Vikings, okay?
True, yeah. I'll go with the Saints here. They've got a good defense, and I think it's kind of a weird game, and somehow they'll force a couple turnovers. So I'll go with the Saints just to be different.
All right, Cleveland at Atlanta. I would like to pick Atlanta here, but I think Cleveland, I don't know. I think Cleveland pulls it off in a pretty sloppy game. So give me the Browns on the road.
I'll go with Atlanta. They've been competitive in their games. They've got a win. I'll go with Atlanta. Again, so many of these teams after Sunday are going to be 2-2, so these would be two of them. So I'll go with Atlanta.
Next, we have the Chargers at Houston. By all accounts, I guess, Justin Herbert should be playing. They're in for a struggle of a season. They've had some injuries, but against Houston, I'm going to take my third straight road team, I guess. Give me the Chargers.
Yeah, I like the Chargers, too. They've got to win this game. One and three start would be disastrous for them, yeah. Especially now that Bosa's out for a long period of time, and also their all-pro left tackle, Rashawn Slater, is out for the season. So they've got to get hopping here.
Next, we have Seattle at Detroit. Look, Detroit can score points, and I think they do it in this game. So here's my first home pick of the day, and I'm going to take the Lions.
The energetic coaching matchup of Pete Carroll against Dan Campbell. Give me the Lions.
Yeah, yes. that is true. It's going to be quite a lot of energy on those sidelines. New York Jets at Steelers. I took the Steelers. I mean, it's not like I can change my mind. It's right here on the sheet. But reluctantly, I took the Steelers. But, you know, one of these teams have to win, right? Right?
Unless it's a tie. I mean, the Steelers did tie a game last year, right? So it could be a tie. I'm going to go with the Jets. It seems like every other week they play a pretty good game. So I'll go with the Jets in a mild upset.
All right, Jacksonville at Philadelphia, an intriguing matchup to say the least. I'm picking Philadelphia, but I do think Jacksonville is going to put up one hell of a matchup because I do think that they've turned the corner this season and they're not last year's Jaguars, let's put it that way. So give me Philadelphia, but I like this matchup a lot and I think it could go either way.
Big revenge spot, right, for Doug Peterson, fired by the Eagles a couple years ago, and now he's back with Jacksonville, proving he can coach. He's turning that franchise around. But I do like the Eagles. I think, you know, top to bottom, they look like the most complete team in football. Again, we're just entering October.
Next, we have the Bears heading to the Meadowlands. Is that what they still call it, the Meadowlands? I don't know.
Yeah, why not?
Sure, that's what I know it as. Chicago, the Bears are going to lose because they physically cannot move the ball forward. They have like 230-some-odd passing yards through the first 3 weeks, which is, I mean, come on. That's ridiculous. It's really, really funny. Like, it's not even like sad. It's like funny to me. Like, I'm like, wow. Okay. So give me the Giants in this one because I do like what the Giants can do.
I like the Giants, too. Didn't Patrick Mahomes have, like, more yards than that in the first quarter against Tampa a couple of years ago in the regular season? Remember, like,
Tyreek Hill. 205
yards receiving. Yeah, so the Bears, which, trust me,
I know. Chiefs fans have been hanging on to that the last couple of days. That's come back out to the woodwork because that was the last time that they were fairly officiated, John.
That's right. That's true. It's been all against the Chiefs because obviously the league doesn't want one of its biggest stars playing into the playoffs and Patrick Mahomes because it wouldn't behoove them. I'll take the Giants here because this is one of my big key wins because I have the Giants over 7 for the season. So if they get to 3-1, I'll be in good shape. Give me the Giants.
All right. Next we have Buffalo at Baltimore. Another very intriguing matchup. And I was tempted to take Baltimore here, but I do think the Bills kind of bounce back after last week's sloppy loss. I don't know how you want to put it down in Miami, but I think Buffalo wins this game just because, again, at the end of the day, I'm not quite sold. I just don't trust the Ravens defense, so I think that's unfortunately going to get the best of them. Give me Buffalo in this one.
I like Buffalo too, but it has to be a blowout because the Bills have lost 8 straight one-score games. Mm-hmm. Like, they just either blow teams out or lose close games. That's not a good model, but give me Buffalo. I can't see them starting 2-2.
Yeah, Tennessee at Indy. Indy obviously getting that big win over the Chiefs. I took Tennessee because I do think that they're a better team, but both teams are very, very flawed in my opinion, and it really wouldn't shock me if Indy pulled this off at home. But I will go with Tennessee, and Colts fans, you can thank me later when the Colts win this game.
Yeah, I'll go with the Titans as well. But again, you know what's interesting, Ian? 9 of the 14 games remaining, the point spread is a field goal or less. I mean, this is a week where like every game is a flip of coin. I'll take the Titans in this matchup.
All right, next we have Washington at Dallas, a battle of the NFC East. I took Washington. I mean, Dallas obviously has surprised me a little bit here, but Washington's such a hot and cold team that it's like, I mean, they do some things really well, and then they do things that are so puzzling. I don't. I mean, it kind of again, it's kind of like their quarterback who at times looks great, but you know, then is always kind of due for a boneheaded mistake. Give me Washington.
I agree with you on this. Again, I think it would be great if every team after Sunday essentially was 2-2. So Washington would leave both of these teams at 2-2. Give me the Commanders.
All right, next we have Arizona at Carolina. Another stink fest in my opinion, but we'll see what happens. Give me I'll take the Cardinals in this one reluctantly because as much as I don't like the Cardinals, I like the Panthers a whole hell of a lot less. I just don't think they're that great. So, give me the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'll take the Cardinals. Kyler Murray over Baker Mayfield matchup of former Oklahoma Sooners.
Oh yeah. Next we have Denver at Las Vegas. Yeah, I mean, the Raiders have to win, right? And kind of to your point, I got to give you credit for this because you were kind of talking about this all off season, where you know the Raiders won so many one score games last year. They're 0-3 this season in one score games. So the law of averages have caught up a bit to the Raiders. But my campaign and agenda against Russell Wilson and the Broncos continues. And I will take the Raiders because I'm anticipating yet again another nationally televised game next week with Russell Wilson. And I ask why? Why? Why are you doing this to us so early? So give me the Raiders in this one.
I think Colin Cowherd set the national TV schedule. He's Russell Wilson's biggest
Oh,
fan.
man.
I like the Raiders in this game. Again, they were 4-0 in overtime games last year. They've already lost one overtime game this year. They were outscored last year, somehow made the playoffs. Those things have a tendency of evening out from year to year. But I love the Raiders. I think they get their first win. They're the only winless team in football. I think they win on Sunday.
New England at Green Bay. There was a time. There was a time, John. This would be a marquee matchup. Not so much now. We don't even know if Mac Jones is going to play, although he's trying to. Although I'm going to say probably he won't be out there. Is this a Matt Flynn revenge game? Remember? Remember? Backup Matt Flynn came in, throws 6 touchdowns? No, I don't think so. I do think Green Bay wins this one. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game because, you know, I do think Green Bay is a better team, but we both have expressed concerns about their offense. And if you know, Patriots are certainly a team that's capable of really shutting them down. So I think Green Bay wins, but I think it's going to be very, very low scoring.
Green Bay's gone under in their first three games this year, and I foresee them going under quite a bit because their defense is really good. Even when they're off, they kind of have a bend, don't break mentality, and their offense is struggling. But I like the Packers in this game, and I just want to see how long Bill Belichick and Aaron Rodgers embrace after the game because those two guys have an absolute love fest with each other, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's all centered around Tom Brady, right? Like, I think Belichick, because of his, you know, whatever, with Tom Brady's looking at Aaron Rodgers, go, I could have won 9 Super Bowls with that guy.
No,
see,
I don't agree. No, I don't agree with that.
Oh, and Aaron, I know, I set you off. I set you off. But I think Aaron Rodgers looks at Bill Belichick and said, I had Mike McCarthy and I got this guy LaFleur who looks like a GQ model. If I had had Belichick, I'd have 8 Super Bowls myself. I think they're going to, like, make out at midfield after the game.
No, well, look, I do think that obviously there is a ton of respect, but I mean, again, I don't think, like, you have a different view of how, like, I don't think Belichick is childish and petty like that, and I don't think that the fractured relationship, and I'm using air quotes, between the two, Brady and Belichick, was certainly anywhere near what it has been portrayed. So I will have to disagree emphatically with that. But we'll save that discussion for another day, possibly the off season, possibly a time where we don't have a lot or more picks to get to. including this next game, which is Kansas City at Tampa Bay. And I emphasize at Tampa Bay because, you know, fortunately, this area, the Tampa area, was not hit as hard as it was down south here in Miami from Hurricane Me. But which again, you know, the league and the city, you know, I found it funny that the only segment of fans that were upset about the game staying in Tampa were people who lived in Missouri, which, again, I understand why, because they were hoping to get the game moved out of Tampa. But the reality of it is power was not lost. The area was relatively unscathed. And, you know, there's a lot of positives to actually playing the game. Obviously, 3 days after the hurricane hit, you know, which is also a factor in this decision. So Tampa's going to be a lot more healthy in offense. I mean, we at least know Mike Evans will be back, and I think he could have made a difference, I would imagine, in their loss to the Packers. So I like Tampa in this game. I don't know what it is. I think they're going to get up for this game against the Chiefs, who, you know, I know everyone's, you know, Patrick Mahomes, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. Well, 5 of those came in week 1, and 4 of which were, you know, one was an underhand toss. Like, let's pump the brakes. This offense is struggling, okay? The Chiefs' offense is struggling, and quite frankly, they have not adjusted to life without Tyreek Hill. And this is something we said. Doesn't mean that they can't. Doesn't mean it won't happen over time. But right now, they miss him. And we saw it last week. They missed him. And I think they're going to miss him this week against a very good defense and what I think is a very good offense, save for, again, just missing people. So give me the Buccaneers at home in this one.
I'll just be different. Again, there's so many flip-of-coin games this week. I'll go with the Chiefs here. I do remember in 1985, we had a pretty devastating hurricane in September of 85. So you weren't even born yet, right?
No. That was a year before my time. I was still...
There you go.
I was on my way. I was coming.
You were a thought. I can't remember the name of the hurricane, but it hit the area on a Friday.
Yeah,
it was pretty severe. And the Patriots played a home game that Sunday against the Raiders. There was never talk of moving the game. It was just a different time. I mean, like, remember Ed Rendell, the former governor of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. who was like all up in arms that they were going to delay a game because of snow. He goes, "Oh my God, the Chinese people are laughing at us. We're not tough anymore. We can't even make it to a football game in the snow." He sounded like the angry old guy, but sometimes, you know, I could see where he was coming from. Well, but this is going to be a hell of a game, I think. But maybe another low scoring game, because that's kind of what Tampa's doing now, right? Their defense is excellent. Their offense is struggling. But Evans coming back is big for Brady, without question.
Well, again, my whole thing, and I'll keep railing on this until they change it, they have to change their play calling. They have to put more on Brady's arm and less on the running game, because it's just not effective. But yeah, look, I mean, the only people complaining about the game not being moved are Chiefs fans. And I say that very right. confidently, because it's literally the only people I saw out there. And it's all, you know, it's very transparent why. Move it to Minnesota, okay. What does that do? Oh, it takes the game out of Tampa. It takes away a home game from a city that obviously desperately needs that tax revenue right now. You're talking about one of your marquee games. You're just going to take away a home game. And I saw people, it's like, it'll make up for the Super Bowl. What? Like, Tampa earned that right. Like, they weren't given a home game. They had to win to get there. So, again, the only people making a fuss about this are a small segment of Chiefs fans, because there are a lot of really great, engaging Chiefs fans out there, and certainly ones that know the long history of the team. But, again, just like any fan base, there is a very loud, vocal minority that seem mm-hmm. to think that the Chiefs are the most screwed-over team ever, and, you know, they only lose because of penalties and this, that, and the other. And this was another case of catering to Tom Brady by keeping the Bucs home game an actual home game like it was originally scheduled. So, whatever. That's going to do it. That's it. That's Sunday Night Football. So we're going to say goodbye for the day and say happy, you know, have a great weekend. Enjoy football, and hopefully, we get a lot of great games here coming up this weekend. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we will talk to you later.